Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. Also on BitChute and YouTube at Speaking Podcast. I forward our podcasts, Learn Polish Podcast, Meditation Podcast, Awakening Podcast, and the Crypto Podcast. And that's how I met our guest today, because he was actually on episode number 10 of the Crypto Podcast. And it's basically learning how to take profit from your investment. And I'm not going to tell you anymore, because you'll have to go away and listen to that episode. Please welcome my guest, Chandler Walker.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a good time on the Crypto Podcast where we talked about compounded wealth and making more money so you have more money available, which everybody wants. And I'm happy to today to talk about how to sell without being salesy, how to speak with a purpose, and how to have confidence in everything in your drive and desire as you move forward and speak with other human beings.
Yeah, excellent. So I suppose you might as well give people a little synopsis of who's Chandler.
Yeah, so I'm a guy who, I have a three-year-old daughter right now. I grew up with a mother who suffered from bipolar disorder, which was, it was a challenge growing up because I had to learn how to communicate with another human being who was had very high highs and very low lows. And so I had to learn how to communicate in a neutral way and not communicate out of anger and not communicate emotionally. And I think that sort of taught me how to communicate without my own ego being involved. And ultimately that led me to a medical school path because I wanted to create change in the world, because we weren't able to actually figure out what was going on with my mother till I was in my 20s. Because back then, what really happened was if you said you haven't had a medical problem or you had something going on in your mental health, people would say, oh, just shut up and put a smile on your face. That doesn't exist. There's no mental health problems. But in reality, there are. And it's a massive problem today because we decided to ignore it for years and years and years. And so now it hits us like a truck. And she didn't figure it out until her own self-education way down the road. And that led me to a medical school pathway where I thought I was going to help solve problems for people. And so I studied biochemistry and molecular biology, got deep into immunology and microbiology. But then when I got into the medical route and I started precepting, I noticed something that sort of disenfranchised me. And it was the idea that we weren't really necessarily trying to make people better. We were mostly providing medication as a short-term fix or as a fix to keep people going. It was like a band-aid solution. And it's not a shot at doctors, it's the system. You can't tell someone to eat an apple because they're not going to keep eating apples and you don't have the ability to follow through. But you can give someone a pill and for whatever reason, they'll keep taking their pills.
Yeah. And like with the bipolar, just for those, because you know, I've seen, you know, people are more conscious of it. Is there any kind of tips that you could kind of let people know? Because I know some people are actually dealing with that somebody, you know, friends or family might have it from, you know, your journey on that.
Yeah, I think the first step is you have to learn to love the person for who they are and learn to not hate them for what they're suffering from. I think a lot of people hold a lot of animosity towards people with bipolar disorder because they think they can control it. And the fact of the matter is they can't control it. They don't know how to control it. They get these extreme shifts and they don't know how to shift in and out. So it puts them on these massive highs and these really low lows. And it puts them in this place to where they can't really make conscious decisions for themselves. And so if you're a loved one has it, or a friend has it, or a family member has it, or even yourself, or you think you might, one of the best things to do is learn to ask questions. If someone who has bipolar disorder starts getting really angry and agitated and then on a really high, you start asking them, hey, what's going on? Hey, why do you feel this way? Hey, what's making you feel this way? And if you continuously ask them questions, you can ground them. And that's what's important, because you move them from here down to here to put them in a neutral place just by asking simple questions and removing your ego and emotions from the equation.
Because I think what happens in 99% of the situation is you realize that they're kind of acting irrationally and you respond the same, which doesn't help the situation. So by actually grounding yourself and trying to just talk to them, you know, I always say that, like, you know, even any relationship, if you can keep your calmness, you know, you can control anything. You know, sometimes it takes 5 minutes, sometimes it might take a bit longer, but if you can maintain control without losing your temper, you can resolve most things.
Exactly. And it works in a lot of situations. My girlfriend's father, he had Alzheimer's, he had dementia, and people didn't understand how to work with that sort of situation. So they would get frustrated and mad when he wouldn't kind of listen and pay attention. Because if you've ever been around someone like that, they tell their own stories in their head. They're not rational, and they don't typically want to listen to you. And sometimes they can get aggressive when they're told to do something they don't want to do. So what I figured out was I spoke with him and communicated with him in the same way. And he would do what I told him to do. He would work with me. He would take showers when I told him to take showers. He would just react in a way to where he did what I needed him to do, because I communicated with him in a neutral way, asked him questions, and I'd even play into his stories, because a lot of people think those stories need to be rational. Like, oh, that's not true. That never happened. For me, it would be like, oh, well, tell me about that. What made that happen? How did that happen? When did this happen? And it really branched into a cool relationship that I had, where I could actually help this person move along and help this person live a good life, even though they were suffering from this horrible thing.
Excellent. Excellent. So I know we're going to touch on the sales, because that's how we kind of agreed to actually do this, because you were telling me about the ethics of selling. And I know there is, because I don't know where we, when we spoke about that, were we during the recording or was it actually offline, but about the sliminess that goes on, because I've seen a load of it at different events and everything. And I suppose you might kind of tell us what you've created.
Yeah, that's a good question. So basically, when I broke off from med school, my next path was I needed to do something to help people who want to be well and create a holistic wellness environment. So I had the pleasure of my father, who was a contractor. He owned a siding and roofing business when I was growing up. So he would take me to customers' houses and I would watch him. I would watch him work and watch him just experience the whole thing. So the good news is I had entrepreneurship sort of in my head, still had no idea what I was doing, but I had it there and gave me the confidence to move forward. And the only reason I ever went with him was because he bought me a donut and orange juice. If he didn't buy me that, there was no way I was in. I was out. So as a kid, that was really important to me. But what that did was it gave me the confidence to move and open up my own brick and mortar. And our brick and mortar was devoted to six pillars of wellness: mental health, social health, sleep, nutrition, fitness, and habits. And as of recently, I've added a seventh pillar, which is wealth, because I think people can't be well if they're not financially okay. But what happened along the way here was we had a fairly expensive product for people to get in and work with us on. And I had to learn how to sell something at a high end price. It usually a $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 or more. And I was doing this, all the sales conversations myself. And in the beginning, I was able to sell fairly well, but I started hiring coaches. And these coaches, they started telling me, you need to be aggressive. You need to go for the clothes. If they cry, they buy. You need to stab them with the knife and twist it. And for me, it really disenfranchised me, because I didn't get into this game to manipulate people. I got into this game to make people better. And so now here I was in this situation, being taught to manipulate and bully people to make them better later. I felt like I was living a lie, and I felt like I was completely off base with where I was going. And to be honest, I would have rather just shut the business down than go down this path of manipulation and aggression. So what I did was I looked at what my sales process was previously. What was I doing? How was I selling? I was just a kid who came out of med school or trying med school, and I didn't know how to sell or what I was doing. I just knew how to communicate. So I took the concepts that I learned with growing up with my mother. I took the concepts that I learned in college, and I was lucky enough to have a friend who was a doctor in clinical psychology who introduced me to a lot of talk therapy modalities and realms. So I took that component that we had in our mental health curriculum, our social health curriculum, and I took the cognitive behavior therapy, motivational interviewing, the acceptance commitment therapy, a bit of trauma and recovery. And all of that I combined with the way I was communicating and created this new psychotherapeutic process to create what we call compassion conversations, or how to sell without manipulation, aggressive tactics, or just feeling salesy.
And I've seen on your LinkedIn, you've done a course with Tony Robbins and Dean Grassosi. I know he's the real estate guy. I'm not sure how you actually pronounce it. Is that something that you've done later than that, or kind of during that journey?
Yeah, that was later on. So I had the sales process mapped out. I had the wellness process mapped out, and I got invited to be part of that program. And so I took part in it, and it was a great program. And it was really interesting, because from Tony Robbins, one thing that I was never really big on was NLP. And what I learned from him was a way to sort of use NLP that wasn't manipulative and aggressive, because if you've ever seen NLP, it can be quite manipulative. It can be the way to sort of trick people into making decisions. So what I did was I learned that NLP essentially works in a similar way to cognitive behavior therapy, and we can move NLP and the vernaculars it uses and the language patterns into a more focused cognitive behavior idea, and it turns it into a pathway and a platform and a language communication pathway that allows you to fix people and work with people long-term and have things that you say actually help them long-term. And I think that's the problem with the NLP side of things. It's very short-term. People forget after about a day, but if you move it over to this environment, it can actually last quite a bit of time. And so your one sales conversation with someone can be a therapeutic conversation that they never thought that they would have had on a sales conversation. And then what that does is it builds leadership. And when people see you as a leader, they see you as someone worth following. When they see you as someone worth following, it drops their wall of sales resistance. And when that happens, now you become the only person that they want to work with.
Excellent. And I have seen different tactics, how some of these high-end guys do. I mean, I know that Tony Robbins has a lot of upselling as well. He gets people in either free or at a very low end, and then it's kind of the upsell as well. But there's so many different people that I have seen, and like a lot of the time, the tricks that they play is they go for the, unless you invest in yourself, you can't kind of, how can you become this? You should be investing. And they give the story first before they do the pitch. In other words, they're making you feel guilty for not investing in yourself.
Exactly. And I think that's a big problem, because when you make people feel guilty for doing something, they're going to do it, but then after the fact, they're going to regret it. And so what these people don't tell you is they have a really high rate of refund requests and a really high rate of failure. And for me, my sales process needs to represent low refund requests and a high rate of success, because that's ultimately what's going to dictate whether or not my sales process was successful. So for me, it's not about, and I think that's so cliche, telling people you need to invest in yourself. How can you expect to grow if you don't? I think it's a crock, and it doesn't make sense, because if I invest in myself, but I get into something that I didn't need to get into, and now I'm worse off because now I'm not only broke, but I didn't get any results. Investing in myself didn't help. And so playing into that manipulative structure, I think, is horrible. And so the way I want people to make purchasing decisions is I don't want to tell them they need it. If I'm up on stage or something telling them, you need to do this right now. If you don't, you're not invested in yourself. You don't care. You're not going to be successful. They can doubt that decision, and they're going to, because it's going to wear off. So my goal is to help them recognize why they need it, help them recognize what's really going on, help them spot the triggers associated with why they haven't been successful long-term. And then that shifts it into what the real problem is. Because ultimately for me, the goal is to take the external statement and move that into what their real internal beliefs are. And you can only do that by getting a human being to question themselves. I can't question them into it. They have to learn to question themselves and then sell themselves on why they need it.
And are you actually kind of promoting this on stage yourself, or is it all kind of one-on-one calling for your program?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have a process where we teach sales in terms of the spoken word, both on the phone, in person, and from the stage. And we teach sales from the written word as well. So how to write copy, because I think one of the most important things you can do to be good at sales is not only learn how to sell one-to-one, but learn how to sell one-to-many and learn how to write sales in copy. Because if you can do that, it's the same thing. Copy is sales. Sales is copy. If you can speak it and write it, it's going to come off naturally. That's going to come off like it's something normal. And you're not going to sound like just a guy reading a script, or you're not going to write copy with like six bullet points that are just finding the pain, finding the problem, and just blank copy. So you're going to move into this emotionally driven aspect to where you can not only speak into people's hearts and souls, but you can step out of your own ego and step into their brain to really understand what's going on in their environment.
Is this something that you've looked at, kind of, I suppose, helping the big boys out there that are using these dirty tricks? Because I know for a fact, I've seen it so many times, people spending money that they don't have to think that they can make a decent income based on the knowledge that they're going to get. And as like you said earlier, they feel guilty later, they realize it's not for them. But I would love to see the likes of the people that are doing these sneaky tricks. And like you mentioned about the copyright as well, I know I mentioned that yet. I don't know that it was it live as well on the other thing, but you know, one of the companies that I was involved with was like, it was selling franchises, and they had a lot of the scripts that you were reading out, and it was all dirty tricks. It was kind of like, you're going to get to speak to the next guy, and you're lucky if you get to speak to him. And you know, it was all a game. And I found out, you know, it's just without even realizing, I mean, I wasn't told that they had a system for basically which franchise would be good for you. And it was always geared towards ones that they own themselves. That was always part of the tree selection, and might be one or two. So they were like double dipping on it. And that just shows the level of kind of corruption in the sales industry.
Yeah, and it's terrible. At the top, at some of the highest level games, people will say anything and do anything to get you to part with your money. And I think it's important as a consumer to really ask questions. A lot of the time in the sales process, if you ask questions, they try to make you feel bad about it. Like, why should I make a decision today? Oh, because only real winners make decisions. And you're only high level if you make a decision right now, because that's how real winners do it. But then when you look at the most important people in the world, the highest level people in the world, above these people who are whatever, they do take time to make decisions. They do take 24 hours. They do make decisions over a slower period of time, because it's intelligent to do it that way. If you make a decision in the moment, you're likely emotional, and you're likely not going to make the best decision for you. But if you take time to think about it, what happens is your emotional mind goes to the side, and your logical mind is actually allowed to come into play, because humans work in what we call the elephant and the rider. The elephant is the emotional mind. It just drives everything everywhere. And it operates first. Then after a period of time, the rider is allowed to come into play, who is the logical side of the brain, who can say, wait, hold on a second. You're being manipulated. This guy's asking you weird questions. You're about to make a decision you shouldn't make. And so I think we need to really take a step back and recognize when manipulation is happening, and not be afraid to ask questions, and not try to be the nice guy when we're being sold something, because we have to be able to stand our ground and defend ourselves.
What I've noticed is with a lot of kind of online stuff that they're selling something, it's the door is open at a low fee, and they'll show you the video and they'll explain everything. So then you go in and buy it. No, it might be something for $7, $97, whatever it is. And then you go in and you're placing the order. And then you're bombarded with about 50 other sales tactics just for now. You got 15 minutes to make your decision, and they list all the different things and what you're getting. And what I've learned, because normally you just close out, I don't get other stuff. But what I notice is if they're charging, say, $300 for the next part that they're trying to sell you, if you exit out, they'll go just for you, and then it's $100. So just by, so you can even, just as a little trick for yourself, that you can open another tab, you can always go back to the other one, because you might think it closes, but it doesn't, because I've played around with that. So you can actually, even if you did want it and you realize, okay, no, there's not a better offer, and they're saying thank you, goodbye. But there was something recently, I think it was Frank Kern's sales. He said, I know he's a big marketing guy and he's good and everything. There must have been about 10 after placing the order for what I wanted. I think there must have been 10. Do you want this? Do you want this? And that is sad that they're doing that, because they've already got your credit card detail and they just want to just take the next thing off you.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. What's happening is they have the first product, which they lose money on. Then they have to get you on the second or third product so they can break even on their ad spend. But the problem is, like, you buy that first thing, then you get the little button that says add this for only whatever. And then so you add that, and then you go to the next page, one time offer. And then that thing happens. If you don't buy it, you get the special new one time offer. If you buy that, then you get the new one time offer. And sometimes it's like 3 or 4 upsells before you can finally get out of the thing and stop paying attention to it, which I think is a big problem. And I think you mitigate that a lot, especially in the beginning of the mid-level entrepreneur, by just selling something that's a higher end service. I like the idea of the higher ticket service, because I can sell something for $5,000 or $6,000 versus trying to sell you 84 things at $300. And it's only one sales process. It can be simplified. It can be emotionally driven, but it doesn't have to be manipulative. It's a lot easier to make happen. And I think if people are selling the lower end stuff, it works better if we build a relationship to sell it. So rather than like running ads to cold audiences and upselling them 54 times, what you should probably do is run ads to fill a Facebook group, go live in your Facebook group a couple times a week, provide value, and then drop an offer in there, and people will buy whatever you want because they trust you and they believe in you. You took the time to build that relationship. And funny enough, your return on ad spend is going to be a lot higher in that regard because people will be much more likely to make a purchasing decision because they know who you are.
Exactly. And, you know, even if you do buy the first one without doing the upsell and you realize this is fantastic, I'll explain. There was one thing I decided, okay, I want to be doing coaching for the podcasting because, yeah, I've got five podcasts, you know, there's four of them in the top 5%. So I know what I'm doing and I've learned a lot over the 4 years, you know. So I said, yeah, it's a good angle to go. So I bought a course on that. And part of it, then there was like a coaching call that said an hour. And I said, look, we're trying to, you know, they're kind of telling you that, look, this is a package that could be long-term of coaching. But even if you decide not that, you'll still get an hour of benefit for the thing. So I thought, grand. And I knew straight away, I wasn't going to, you know, I just said, no. But if you met somebody that was fantastic, you know, you can change your mind, but you're going into. The minute I was talking to a man, within 5 minutes, less than, I think it was 9 minutes, he basically was like saying, have you got 30 grand to invest in? Like, you know? And
yeah.
So I say, yeah, I have 30 grand, but I wouldn't invest in that. And it was kind of like, yeah, well, you're not serious about this business and best of luck and good luck. And I thought it was so slimy because I was told one thing. You're going to get an hour. We'll help you. We'll give you advice. And I had a list of all questions that I really wanted to know. And I know that if he had given me his heart and basically tried to help me when I didn't need a coach, or if I did go, wow, I'm after getting so much value. This is going to pay me. It's worth me investing in having him. But he'd done the opposite effect. It was like, I would never, ever deal with him after that call.
Yeah, we call that a bait and switch. You bought something. And then they said, hey, we'll give you this great phone call. And then you got on the phone call and they were like, hey, so what we're going to actually do is sell you stuff. And so they baited you in with something that seemed cool. And then they switched it up and bombarded you with the sales process, which I think is highly unethical. Because what could have happened is, and what a better process would have been, would be to talk through your questions and to work with you and to help you, and then offer you another call to maybe talk about how they might be able to help, because then it's not as much of a bait and switch. It's provide value, offer this thing. If you want it, cool. If you don't, that's fine too. And then just put you in a Facebook group and nurture you for the next 6 or 7 months. And eventually someone does make a purchasing decision. And I think that's an important distinction when we look at in sales. We have to detach from the need to sell today and attach to the need to build a relationship. Because what happens is we'll make sales today, but if we also focus on that relationship and really helping people, what happens is you build this snowball impact because people start coming back. The old adage that people are never going to come back if they get off the phone, it goes away. And they start coming back. They start saying, hey, I want to do this now. Hey, can I be part of this? Hey, I'm ready today. And when you follow up with people, they're excited to hear from you. So you build this pipeline to where you depend less on front-end marketing and you have a relationship-based platform that brings people in on the regular and consistently and in a predictable way for sales.
Excellent. I know you've spoke around different states. I don't know, was it regarding this business or regarding the health side of things? But, you know, the experience of actually speaking, one, in different states, but you've also spoken Canada, I think Australia, and somewhere else I've written down here. It's the Netherlands as well. So, like, what's your experience with just dealing with different audiences? And one, locally in America, and two, internationally?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've spoken in the US, Australia, Canada, the Netherlands, and I've had audiences in the UK and several other places. And what I think is super important as a speaker is you can't just show up with a canned speech that you do every time. You have to look at who your audience is going to be. Usually the event organizer can tell you what the demographics are, the psychographics are. And then you have to understand, okay, if I'm in a US-based audience, this is the way I'm going to speak. If I'm in an audience in the Netherlands, I need to speak in a different way. If I'm an audience in the UK, I need to speak in a different way. If Canada, I need to speak in a different way because different cultures operate and have different ideals, thoughts, and philosophies based on especially business concepts and sales. And so if you can cater and understand who your demographic is and really research that and really understand the cultural impacts and implications behind what you can and should and shouldn't say, it puts you in a place to where you fit in. You're not just a foreigner or another guy showing up to speak. You're someone who speaks to them and someone who connects with them, which I think is important.
And with the sales system that you're doing, have you any kind of examples, statistics of, say, a company or sole trader that was using the old method and then embraced your system and then their results after that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So typically when we work with organizations, so we work with two types of people who have their own sort of online business and they need to sell, they're like selling on the phone or whatever, or they have a sale. And the other side of things is we work with sales teams. So we'll get sales teams from like real estate. We'll get like virtual assistants who do sales via Messenger. We'll get just overall sales teams and people who want their sales teams to be more high performing and more relationship focused. And what we found is, when we install our system, the close rate of the salesperson usually doubles or triples. And then what we've also found is 65% of the people who you talk to who didn't buy actually come back within a year and buy from you. So we're seeing year over year revenue go up 30 or 40% just by the simple fact that this relationship aspect starts coming in and the snowball impact starts driving revenue and business because people actually come back and sales reps, interestingly enough, stick around longer. So we're finding turnover is a lot lower amongst sales reps and like SDRs and even your front end salespeople because they feel better about where they're headed. They feel better about what they're doing. And they have a real clear direction and focus and a why as to why they're actually selling stuff.
And like with the system, how long does it take? Like, is it kind of something that's kind of intensive or is it done over a long period?
Yeah, we try to do this fairly intensively. We usually get the whole process done in about 9 or 10 weeks. And what we do in the process is we have week one or module one. People will go through our program. They'll watch the videos. They'll do the worksheets. Then they have to record a video of themselves, either doing role play with a partner, or they'll have to record a video of themselves doing like the mirror or whatever. We'll look at it, critique it, say, hey, cool, you're good, green light to move to the next module. Or we'll critique it and say, hey, you need to work on this, this, and that. So that way they can get better at it and improve and actually master the process. So what we have is a fully coached program where you don't move forward until we know that you've recognized some level of mastery for the material and content. So that way, when you're actually doing it and going through it, you can go out and make sales and feel confident about it because we're forcing you to practice. And one of the most important tenets I have for teaching people is if you only show up to game day, if you only show up on stage, if you only show up on the call, if you only show up for the sale, you're never going to be that good at it because you have to practice. And so you have to show up to practice every day to be good at the game. So if we teach people to practice and to be good at practicing and to use that to hone their craft and achieve mastery, all of a sudden game day isn't that hard.
And with like the copywriting and all scripting, is there a system for dealing with kind of curveballs that people might throw at you?
Yeah. So in copy, what we teach are how to sort of reframe objections and thoughts and beliefs in your writing. So in sales, you can usually ask questions to take external statement to internal belief. In copy, we take and understand through research what the demographics and psychographics are of the people we're trying to talk to and speak to. And we use that to create copy that's emotionally driven and tells a story about the person who's going through this and then works through and mitigates their objections through the story. So that way you end up being able to sell through your own written word without being manipulative or using sort of the language patterns of you have to invest in yourself. It's more about, for weight loss, for example, we'd write a story about someone who tried to lose weight their whole life, but didn't recognize that it wasn't even weight loss that was the problem. It was the fact that they had to eat their own whole plate as a child. And that's haunted them forever because now they have a pattern of overeating that they can't get past. And that trigger has manifested and created the issue with weight loss. So it's not even diet that's the problem. And right there, we create that emotional pattern interrupt and shift because now we've taught them that it's not about diets. It's about the fact that they have a trigger that's lasted a long time from being a kid, and that's preventing weight loss. So that new concept and that new idea opens their mind and opens their eyes to something that's much deeper and a much bigger problem.
Excellent. And you might give us one example of, say, a price objection or where you would deal with that.
Yeah. So in a sales conversation, the way we deal with price, and in our sales process, what we have is what we call the challenging leader concept. So our goal is to mitigate and remove all objections before they become a problem. So for in our process, we teach you to work through and talk through objections into the discovery phase of the call. What most people do is they wait till the end. And then when it gets to the end of the call, the person says, well, that's too expensive. And then they just leave and they go off and do whatever. But in our process, what we do is we start talking about finances right away. So we talk about, okay, how much money do you make? How much money do you take home? What does it look like after bills? What's your credit situation look like? And then from that, there are two things happen. Number one, if someone's not comfortable talking about that, we challenge them on it. Because you're challenging not only their ability to financially make this decision, but you're challenging their coachability. And so if someone tells you, well, I'm not comfortable talking about that, we say, well, that's probably a bit of a concern, because if we can't talk about these hard concepts and these things that most people don't want to talk about, I probably won't even be able to help you as a coach, because we're going to have to talk about some hard things. And if you don't trust me enough to do that, well, I'm not willing to bet on your failure. So we want to make sure that if someone says something and they're kind of not doing what we want them to do or not following the process, we want to challenge that, to challenge their coachability, to move them to a direction to where they see that our goal here is to make them better, not just be a salesperson. So what we do in discovery is we understand a complete idea and outline of what the financial aspect looks like. And then at the end, what happens is when we pitch, we have two things in mind. Number one, we know if they can ethically afford this thing. If someone says I have $100,000 in credit card debt and this is my last ditch effort, I'm not going to enroll you in my program. That's not ethical, because you're going to fail out of desperation. But number two, what happens is I now understand where I can fit them. I understand what my normal price is, and I know where I can fit them in a payment plan. So when I pitch, it fits specifically into their budget and what they can actually afford. So finances doesn't become an issue. And even further on finances, usually what happens is if someone says it's too expensive or I want to think about it, it's because they don't think you can solve their problem. So we teach a philosophy we call the level 5 listening concept. And what that is it's being able to ask questions with intent and purpose to drive the external statement into the internal belief to define what the real problem is. And then we work back through what I call connecting the dots to understand the patterns of behavior that have led to failure up to this point and how long that's manifested. So then what happens is we reframe the way they think about the problem of, okay, it's this, into, wow, it's much bigger and it's this. And now they've essentially moved into a position to where they trust and believe in what we're saying and doing, because we've introduced them to a concept they didn't even know existed.
Excellent. And just curious, with referrals then, what percentage of your business comes from referrals?
Yeah, we probably get about 50% of our leads or business from referrals, just because we enroll people in the ethical way. They come into our programs. Our actual goal in the business is to get 3 referrals for every 1 client we bring in. And this builds what I call an exponential growth factor or infinite velocity. And what that means is, say you get 1 client in and that 1 client turns into 3. Now you have 3 clients. Now what happens if each of those clients turn into 3? Okay, well now you have a number that don't have enough fingers to continue counting, and I probably need a calculator, because you grow and you grow and you grow and you grow by an exponential growth factor through referrals. And if you can do that, you reduce your front end marketing costs by a lot, and you reduce the acquisition needs of your marketing team in general, because now you're acquiring leads through this massive referral channel that you've created. And you can the goal here is to systematize this and to put this into a position and place where you can create a predictable 3 referrals off of every 1 client, because statistically every 1 person knows at least 3. And the problem with most businesses, number one, they don't ask. And number two, they don't have a good process to making it happen and work.
No, definitely. Definitely. And with social media, then, like promoting yourself. Actually, just before, because I'd like to go on to social media as we finish out, but with the coaches, because obviously you've grown this, you know, massively, and it's like, how can you, because I'm just thinking of the situation with the system I did with the podcast coaching, it wasn't about podcast coaching. It was just a coach for your business. But like, I could see that the guy that he had doing that was not ethical, and doesn't necessarily mean that he himself, but have you systems in place that you know that you've got the right coaches? Because at the end of the day, it's kind of your name or your business that they're affecting.
Yeah, for sure. So in our sales team, we record conversations and record phone calls. We make sure we tell the person it's happening and we listen to it. So the responsibility of the lead in sales is not only to make sure the team's hitting their numbers, but to make sure the team's not off doing their own thing off in Pluto. So the other process we have is we have a customer success manager whose entire responsibility is achieving a 97% success rate or higher amongst clients. And so what they have to do is listen to coaching calls, listen to what's happening, look at emails, just review things and make sure that the coaching staff is on the right path as well. And so I think the way you can monitor this and continue to control your business without micromanaging is putting the right people in place who can monitor and have checks and balances and systems to make sure that things are happening according to plan. And if they're not, to have a conversation with the individual who's not doing it and understand why, and either make the decision to let them go if they just don't care, or help them and mentor them become better.
Excellent. Yeah, I love that. I love that. So yeah, you might just like, I know you've got a decent YouTube channel, and I know on Instagram, and you mentioned your daughter at the start, so I can see some beautiful pictures with your daughter, so I can see how precious she is to you. So with the social media, for kind of, do you use that for promoting the business as you, the individual, for the different things you're doing, or do you try to keep everything separate?
Yeah, I intermix it. So on my social media, I post copy, long form copy a couple times a week about businesses, whatever I'm doing, whatever site I want to promote. And I mix that in with pictures and ideas and stuff from my daughter and what we're doing. I think my Instagram is a lot more focused on like family and her, because reels are kind of fun to make. We do it together. She likes it. And then my YouTube channel, I have playlists for my wealth and investment strategy, for our DeFi crypto and all that stuff, for our sales stuff, for other concepts and ideas, a whole vlog series about my life. So it's kind of this intermix of everything.
Oh, excellent. Listen, Chandler, second time around, enjoy this conversation as well. So you might let people know how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah. So if you want my 9-step framework to creating compassion conversations, our entire process mapped out, just go to 9-step.cultureofcare.life. That's the number 9-step.cultureofcare.life, not .com. It's .life. If you want to connect with me on YouTube, just go to youtube.com/Chandler Walker SAF. And if you want to connect with me on Instagram, just go to instagram.com/Chandler_SAF. And you'll see me. Most of my pictures are me with either a surfboard and my daughter with me having a good time. So you'll recognize it. Chandler Walker, look for the beachy stuff and you'll find me.
Excellent. And I'll make sure I'll put all the links in both the audio and the video podcast description. Thank you very much, Chandler.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully we gave everyone some value and you enjoyed the episode.
I'm sure they will benefit from what you've said. So thank you. So. That's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. As mentioned, we're on BitChute and YouTube. Find the links in the podcast description. Be sure to subscribe, give us a thumbs up, 5-star review, really helps. Until next week, take care.